Amateur presentation.
Jay, how are you doing?
I was sleeping. Yeah.
Sorry.
No, it's okay. Did you have a late night?
Not really. I mean, I saw Frank playing Nine Souls at, 2 in the morning, but...
Oh, yeah. New time 3. But that's when I went to bed. I'm like, I gotta call it quits. Sean played till 4 in the morning.
You guys are all playing video games. Yeah.
I didn't see Sean online.
He probably hides his online behavior. Oh, he was on Steam.
Yeah, I was on Steam.
So what are you guys playing on then that you can see each other?
PlayStation.
Okay. I'm not a gamer, so.
Are you playing, Jay?
What am I playing? Baldur's Gate.
Oh, right. Dark Alliance.
Yeah. Had to get into that Thieves Guild.
You get a platinum this thing or what?
No, the platinum seems... It's like beating it on easy, beating it on normal, and then there's two hidden ones.
Okay. All right.
Nice.
Make sure I'm D&D here, silent.
Well, I'm glad that all three of you could join in the discussion, but I also wanted to say right off the bat, congratulations on 20 years of film junk. And also you're coming up to your 1000th episode. So I first wanted to just ask all three of you, does one of those milestones mean more to you than the other? Or are they both in terms of equal weight? Like in the way that Frank always talks about all animals being equal.
I mean, I value every anniversary equally. So I would say I'm in line with Frank and his vision of animals and the animal kingdom, but I don't want to speak for these guys.
I think the 20 years sounds better because, you know, some podcasts, they do 3 or 4 episodes a week, 1000 episodes. You could hit that pretty quickly, but 20 years, that's a long time.
It is.
Yeah. I'm more impressed by the 20 and my buds here doing 20. I've only been 15, I think. So I started in 2010 ish. So the 1000 means more to me. I feel like I was a bigger part of that, but you can't like look the other way at 20 years. These guys, they brought me into the fold. I'm nothing without them, literally nothing.
I disagree with that, but I was going to ask you because you have talked about that on the show, Frank, where you almost feel like, you know, you can't celebrate that with Jay and Sean, but you know, you are a big part of what the show is. And, you know, especially the back and forth between Jay and yourself on many episodes, more recently, the Queer and Flow episode in particular being a highlight.
Queer and Flow.
Yes. It will be an infamous episode. I think I always said I likened my joining a film junk to Mark Wahlberg
and Rockstar
meaning Steel Dragon, because I listened to the show and I'd been told about them before I even worked with them, because a coworker of theirs was married to someone I worked with. Like, hey, you got to listen to these guys. They do a film podcast. You'd love it. And I eventually did. And I did love it. And then I got to know them and become very good friends and co-hosts. So it's been quite the journey.
Are you still a fan of the show, Frank?
Oh yeah. I'm a huge fan. I listen to every episode. I'm unable to record, which is a few, but it's kind of nice to go back into listener mode when I'm driving back from the cottage and I fire it up on 1.5 speed on my phone. And it's, I'm just taken away to a blissful land listening to my friends.
So you don't want to slow it down like Arcade though, you know?
No, I'm maybe that's why Arcade was even worse for me, because I'm consuming content at a rapid pace, sometimes 1.75 speed. And so
disrespectful.
Well, it's the way it goes. I'm a content guy.
I noticed for this video interview, you swapped out your Nintendo Amiibos for movie posters.
I did. This is a movie podcast show. Eric doesn't game. He's not a gamer. So had to flip it up a bit. Got to get the Kingpin bowling pin a little screen time.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate that you switched from the Karnak's legend to, you know, your movie side of things. So
yeah, he's still got the he's rocking Karnak's still.
Frank mentioned something that I was curious to ask both Sean and Jay. Do you guys listen to the shows at all? Or I always find like with any recording that I do, I hate the my voice basically, or watching myself back. And I know Jay, you've talked about getting sound clips for the soundboard, but is that something that you guys are able to go back and look at?
I mean, I get sound clips from the other podcast these two jokers do called Game Junk. So I listen to that as purely a fan and sometimes mine some clips from those episodes. But I know Sean listens to all of the shows.
I do not. But I mean, we edit our own show, so you kind of got to go back and hear what was recorded to some degree. And if I'm editing something and I'm laughing to myself, then I'm like, okay, I guess this was a pretty good episode. But, you know, sometimes it's painful.
You laugh when you're editing?
Yeah, sometimes. He's editing, you're like,
you guys are funny guys. What can I say?
Do you notice certain isms or inflections in each other's, you know, I tend to say curious quite a bit. And I know that you've talked about, like, Sean, you say, but as if it was a New England accent in a way, things like that. Have you noticed that more as you guys have progressed over the years?
I have not noticed what anyone says.
You just black out completely.
Yeah. I don't pick up on anything that anyone says.
Yes. The more I've edited, I become very aware of my isms and other isms. And it took a long time to adjust to hearing myself. I still don't like hearing myself. And I'm even more like in tune when I'm listening to myself. And I just, my skin crawls listening to me. So I'm used to these guys. They don't bother me. I love them.
Yeah. Well, same. It's when you're listening to somebody you really enjoy, you know, the conversation. And I think like that's so easy to kind of get lost in it. But when you're a part of it, sometimes it feels like it's a chore sometimes. But another thing that I was interested in knowing more about that you have talked a lot about, but for, you know, this show and people that may be coming to Film Junk for the first time, where would you recommend starting? You know, for a first time listener.
Oof, that is a tough one.
I personally would start with the end of the year episode for the previous year. If you've seen the movies, like if you were kind of getting into cinema and watching a bunch of stuff last year, the end of year recap, I think is a good place to start and understand kind of the tone of the show and compare your personal top tens to our top tens. And I think it gives you a sense of, is this for me or not?
I think also episode 666, where we perform an exorcism on one of our co-hosts, Reed Farrington, is a good place to start.
We did do a clip show a long time ago, episode 250. So it's not very representative of what the show is now, but we should probably do a new one, something that just, you know, an easy way to ease people in, because it's a lot of inside jokes. It is tough. I would say start with like a review of a movie you love, but then if we hated it, you might never listen again. So it's really hard to say.
Yeah, it almost feels like, you know, you have to come to it yourself, and it's all about the personalities. Like, it's all about you guys more so than even the reviews, which, I mean, all three of you are incredibly articulate and thoughtful and funny in the conversation, but I feel as though, you know, like the reviews themselves are secondary to the camaraderie that the three of you have together. You mentioned Reed Farrington. Is it easier to get him on the show, or is it easier to get him into one of your movies, Jay?
But it's definitely easy. Well, it used to be harder to get him into a movie until he got the big opportunity to fly to Hollywood, Los Angeles, USA to be in VHS Beyond, which he's technically a movie star now. But Sean deals with him for podcast bookings. So Sean, it seems pretty easy, but I don't want to speak on your behalf.
Well, the last couple of years, he's reached out more. He's coming out of his shell. He wants to be on the show.
Yeah, he's had stretches where he's been kind of antisocial, maybe. I don't know what the right word is, where it's like you try to reach out to him even just to get together, like, you know, at somebody's house, and he's like, no, I don't want to do that. But lately
He wants to be.
Yeah. Who doesn't?
I'm on our podcast. We need you.
He's a superstar now, so he has to, you know, have that quality of feeling like, you know, he's wanted by his adoring fans.
This is why I slept in and was 15 minutes late for this, because you just want people, you want to know people are waiting and begging.
Okay, but Jay, we get it. You are a great filmmaker, and Beauty Day and How to Build a Time Machine are amazing. Beautiful. We get it.
No, he does. It's Frank's right, though. He does love to be begged. Even in emails, like casual emails back and forth to each other, hanging out, he'll just be like, I'll pass, thanks, but keep emailing me.
Well, he's got to watch Baby Girl then. He needs to review Baby Girl on the show, because that's all about, you know, dominance and submissiveness. And that would be an interesting conversation to have with him.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll have that conversation at some point. He'll say the film was ordinary.
As he usually does, unless it's something that is in complete disagreement with you, Jay, because I've always found that Reed seems to have a bit of a friction when it comes to your friendship. And I don't know if that's changed over the years, but it always feels like there's a bit of animosity on his side of things.
It's all part of the show, dude. It's a bit. None of that leads over into reality at all.
It's, like the character of Frank.
Yeah. These guys can speak to that, I'm sure. It's all what happens in front of the mic stays in front of the mic.
Yes. And then completely forgotten after you record it.
Exactly.
Sean, I've never seen you or heard you get angry on the show. Has there ever been a time where Jay or Frank have pushed your buttons at all? Or have you felt like, okay, let's get the show going, or the behind the scenes aspects of it all?
I mean, there's been a couple times, nothing crazy, you know, like this, I'm pretty laid back. I do have like a weird temper every now and then that just flips. And then like 5 seconds later, I feel like a complete idiot. And I'm like, why did I feel that way? So once in a while it happens, but very rarely.
I mean, we can see subtle cues when he starts steaming.
But that's the thing, like my face will turn red sometimes, and then like 99% of the time it's embarrassment or I'm uncomfortable about something, but once in a while it is because I'm angry. But they always, I mean, I don't know if they're joking, but they think it's because I'm starting to get angry when usually I'm not.
I mean, the good thing now is Sean recently got glasses, and whenever he's truly angry, his glasses steam up. It's pretty.
Yeah,
it's telling.
Helps you know.
All right. Well, we were talking about Sean's temper, but Sean, from your perspective, when Frank and Jay get into a heated argument, are you ever concerned, or do you think that it as well that is performance based?
I mean, I can usually tell when it's, you know, all in good fun. There's maybe a couple times where like people seem like maybe they're actually getting angry, but I mean, that's the thing. The show has become largely about busting each other's balls, which is, you know, maybe not for everyone, but you know, that's just, you know, that's years of friendship. And, just, that's kind of what makes it enjoyable for us, I guess, after all this time. So
busting chops, Sean, this is like cable, like local cable.
Yeah.
I mean,
they flagged my review of Night Bitch. So, you know, that's okay. I'm sure that it can be edited out accordingly. But do you agree with that, Frank? Are you all about sort of, you know, busting each other's chops, so to speak?
Oh, yeah. That's like pretty much the whole show. And I'm never angry. I'm just playing it up. I love it. I enjoy being made fun of. it's one of my favorite things in the world, people making fun of me. So I welcome it. Not a problem. Jay, you got to be careful pushing his buttons. He'll lose it. And Sean, too.
Jay?
No, I mean, I do. I can get angry, but I actually feel like maybe I'm the one who gets angry the least.
Yeah, because we know if we push
like
you,
sincerely.
Load.
Okay, so you're just staying at bay.
Well, unless you have to watch Deadpool and Wolverine, then you get really angry. But
that's not angry at you guys. That's angry at the world.
Yeah, fair enough.
I'm glad you brought that up, though, Sean and Jay, because Deadpool and Wolverine did feel like it was a soul-sucking experience, especially with the way, I mean, you've tweeted about this before, Jay, where, you know, blockbuster cinema now is a very different beast than it was 20, 30 years ago, where it felt like maybe it was tapping into social commentary and there was more consideration for there to be an artistic value to it. And now it's all about product. You know, next month we're getting a Minecraft movie. And, you know, with that conversation, has that changed what you'll select to review? Because it feels like you're going into every episode where you don't have to review a Marvel movie or a Pixar film, and there's less obligation for those things now.
Yeah, well, I did have to see Deadpool and Wolverine, but I did want to see it because I like, I think Wolverine's cool. But I personally, I know these guys are probably more willing to watch a lot of stuff than I am lately. And I think it's just because we're all getting old. We've been doing this for 20 years. I've got a giant collection of movies where I've watched a quarter of them, and I'm realizing there's a chance I might not get to them before my passing. And I'm spending my time watching whatever Captain America versus whatever, let's see, superhero movies, which I do like some of them. But yeah, I think being a little less, I think using the veto rule has really changed the game. And forgetting how many vetoes there are or have been used can be nice, too. That can come in handy.
Frank, do you think there should only be a certain amount of vetoes, or do you think that the veto should be used whenever one of you decide to?
Well, there's definitely a limited amount of vetoes, and there should be. And sometimes that gets a little gray when it comes to counting them, particularly in Jay's case. But I'm also a big fan of the veto system. And Sean, have you ever used a veto?
I don't think so.
Can somebody give a veto to another host if they don't use them?
Certainly not. That is not allowed.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like, it's tough because you think, oh, you know, we got to review the big movie of the week or whatever. But if the conversation ends up being not very interesting and we all hate the experience, then that's not really fun to listen to either. So that's kind of...
I might disagree. I think
so. I know some people like
might say those are the best reviews. When
I know, something. But I think it's
the Deadpool
more...
and Wolverine episode is pretty good. You know, I'm sorry, Jay, that you had to waste your time on the movie, but the conversation I think benefited because of your criticism of the film, and I think it was valid. So, like, it's always good to have, you know, people not subscribe to the brand itself and look at movies by a case-by-case basis. And I kind of feel like a lot of people, even like with A24 or Neon, like there's like this feeling of like, okay, because it's being distributed by this company or it has the studio logo, it's automatically great or good, or, you know, you should like it and, you know, maybe watch the movie before making that choice, you know?
Yeah, there's definitely a hint of criterionitis, classitosis when it comes to A24 and Neon. I can't believe we haven't come up with terms for that yet. And something I'll think about over the next few days.
Well, I mean, with Thunderbolts coming out, they're already starting to market that as, you know, like A24 adjacent within Marvel Studios, which is very disturbing.
Yeah, I saw that.
So,
Frank, check, you got to check it out, man.
Frank will not be happy about this.
So the question that I'm going to ask both Jay and Sean, you've talked about this a lot, but how did Film Junk begin and how did it start from a radio show and space junk, and how did you end up focusing it more on film?
So we had a radio show at Brock University, and it was mostly music. Sometimes we would just chat about random things we were interested in. Occasionally we would throw in a movie review. And then I think we just kind of, I think there was like new people running the station, and we started to feel like, oh, we can't really do the stuff we want to do anymore. And that was exactly the time that podcasting was starting. And we were like, oh, well, we'll just throw it on our website and go from there. And it started off the same. It was music, video games, movies. It was like a mix of stuff. And then, I don't know, I think we just realized like, this is a lot of stuff to try to cover. Maybe we need to just focus on one thing. And movies just seemed to be the thing we all agreed on. So that's how it happened.
Yeah.
And Jay, there was something you mentioned before that I wanted to go back to about the existential quality of, you know, considering how many more times you're going to be able to watch a movie or even watch a film that you haven't seen yet. Do you look at the show that way at all based on the legacy of how long it's gone? Because I know, like, for example, you've talked about Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and how you look at that as both nostalgic, but also how it reminds you how much closer to death you are. And so I wonder if like if the show has had that effect on you, because you've also have been very candid about, you know, maybe the industry being less than enticing compared to what it maybe was and compared to what it, like, you know, the hopes and dreams when someone first starts or tries to get in. You've, you know, been very honest about, you know, your own experiences that way.
Yeah, I mean, I guess because the podcast has been around for so long, you can't help but think, like, looking at movies that we've reviewed on the show that feel like we've just talked about them recently and realizing they're now, like, something like Inglourious Basterds or, you know, some of the bigger films that we've talked about that are 10 plus years ago now and don't feel like that because we've kind of just been doing this regularly. It is a little bit like a time warp in a weird way. But I try to not think about the fact that, I mean, even behind you, you've got a nice collection there, and you will probably be dead before you watch half of those. And we could say the same thing about Frank and his retro video game room, even though he's trying to dress it up like a movie room.
You can see him right
such
here.
A poser, Frank. Such a poser.
I'm going to be on Cinema Unseen, not Games Unseen.
Well, I mean, it's a fair point that you bring up, because it does feel like the older you get, you reflect back on those things. And, you know, I worry about, like, am I going to miss something that I should have seen and then, you know, keel over at some point? And, you know, like, those are kind of situations where you think about that. And I've thought about that more, even, you know, mentioning the backdrop. I think about the Movie Manifesto so much when it comes to how I organize things. But recently, when you guys talked about it, because I asked a question about actually pertaining to Flow, I think the Film Junkers should start a Flow fund to get Frank a copy of Flow when it comes out on Criterion. But do you guys think you'll ever do another episode on the Movie Manifesto and talk about your organization now in terms of what you, how you organize things? Because I mean, my backdrop would probably make Frank sick, because I have television and film put together, but it's all Blu-ray and then 4K in its own sections.
Yeah, I was doing a little scan up there. I saw some TV box sets mixed in with other things.
Yeah, but I think your backdrop makes all of us sick, not just Frank.
But I think you're pretty good at not mixing media, which is probably the biggest violation of the Movie Manifesto. Like, I'm thinking about going digital. We'll see if it happens. I've been talking about it for a while. Maybe a digital manifesto is the next step.
Do you think you'll go digital first, or do you think you'll flip some of your old media first to sell? Because you always talk about flipping.
Yeah, he's a big flipper.
Yeah, I talk about flipping a lot. I feel like 2025 is the year where I really sell a lot of stuff and consolidate my collections.
Do you buy that, Sean or Frank or Sean or Jay? Do you buy that at all?
Absolutely not.
No. Nobody's going to be buying that.
I'll have to get the slip covers from under the stairs and start pairing them up with things and make a killing on eBay. I can't wait to sell this stuff.
That's my favorite Wes Craven movie, The Slip Cases Under the Stairs.
Yeah.
Terrifying.
Have you seen the sequel, the Sesame Street metallic plushie stand under the stairs? Yeah, I would like to do, we've talked about doing another manifesto. I think it's time because the last one we did was pre-4K.
Yeah.
Which is that in itself, that's a long time ago. That's like 8+ years ago.
Well, the premiums, Frank and I were talking about this before we even started. The first premiums that you did were back in 2011. So it's been 14 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Could imagine if we doing that first premium, we're like, we've got another 14 years we're going to be doing this still.
Well, I mean, if you don't want to, you know, really have a breakdown right now, I mean, you could be doing this for another 14 years, another 15 years.
Well, that's where death happens. Because we're now getting into that zone. But when I say that jokingly, I think it's shocking because it doesn't feel like that many years because we all have a lot of fun when we do it. And we've had all these markers that, you know, remind us of certain eras of the podcast when we were focusing on certain films or even amongst ourselves, certain controversies or like the new Frank era,
prestige, you know,
the prestige discussion. These are
energy
all
drinks.
Yep. All things people watching this have no idea what we're talking about, but and that, you know, you just think like, when was the monster era of the Film Junk podcast? And it's like probably 7 years ago now, 8 years ago.
Or even the Fruit Gusher kid, you know, like every time I think about frying a Blu-ray, I think about definitely a buy, you know, and it's because of the show, you know.
Yeah.
It's kind of incredible to think like how long things go. But then also, you know, you talk about how maybe you saw something last week, but in actuality, it was 2 years ago that you watched, you know, the said film, or you've forgotten that you watched the movie and then you log it on Letterboxd for the first time, but you've already actually seen it. So.
Yeah.
Well, I hope I'm not stepping on Eric's toes here, but when people talk about Film Junk eras, I think the biggest separation is the soundboard era versus
free and
soundboard era.
Yeah, yeah.
And I feel like that's the one kind of member of the podcast that's not been represented yet. I don't know if Jay.
Hello.
I was thinking about it recently as well, obviously with the passing of Gene Hackman and Sean's love of the French Connection in the famous inserts episode. But yeah, that's something where it's like, that also feels like very much has gotten into my head. And I can only imagine what it's like for other listeners of the show. Anytime I hear someone say I'm intrigued, I cannot help but, you know, think about that or Rosquidu or any of those things.
French Connection.
I like that that what you just said, a squeedoo. Like no one seems to know what is actually being said there. But
yeah
the soundboard has been I mean, it's been a great thing in my life, and I think everybody across the board 100% love the soundboard. It's not controversial at all, but it does give me just another place to be creative.
Do you ever think you'll get bored of it, though, or it'll become too much of a gimmick for the show?
No.
That's why you can swap out clips, change it up. It's an evolving. Yeah.
But what happens when every other podcast starts doing soundboards? You're not, then you're out, Jay. I just know it.
This is the thing, though. We've been around for 20 years now. We've seen every other podcast follow in our footsteps. And, you know, we've seen the podcast space change into something that is now celebrity driven. And it feels like podcasts are getting shorter and more heavily produced, and ours are getting longer and the perfect level of produced, I think. I think the show is in my mind more like morning radio like show, like we're the Zoo Crew, but we talk about movies. I mean, really, it's like inspired by the Howard Stern show to a degree, with the interpersonality, like the connections between people who work on the show and little petty disagreements and arguments that are, you know, driven into the ground to the point where hopefully it's funny, but that's the show. But it's a challenge for people, I think, when they first start listening, because there's a lot of lore to catch up on, to understand what we might be referring to or what our distinct personalities might be.
We're storytellers, just like everyone else on the planet.
Yeah.
What we do, storytelling.
It's like trying to jump into Days of Our Lives now.
Yeah.
Like you have to kind of just accept that there's been 40 years of Days of Our Lives behind you. You can't go back and start from the beginning and watch. You just have to kind of like work your way into it. And eventually you'll find that Days of Our Lives rhythm with the Film Junk podcast. That's for sure.
Might be worth mentioning, there is a Film Junk glossary that contains many inside jokes and terms. If someone listens to an episode and they don't know what's going on or doesn't know what something means, that can be an informative.
Sean, can you add a squido to the glossary?
Sure, yeah.
Oh, so I just wanted to ask all three of you, favorite soundboard clip at the moment.
I mean, I'm always partial to the ones that I just add. So I've got, I do like Dr. Phil.
This is gaming anger.
I think that's a good one.
I like a dedicated amount of
Wham.
Wham, yeah.
Yeah, that's
what's
the one
the recommended amount of dedicated wham I should have to a server.
Yeah, even though I don't know what he's saying in half of that, that's the one that makes me laugh the most right now.
And Blood. I like Blood for Sean.
Blood is good. I like Let's Go. Okay, Let's Go. There's lots of YouTube. I love YouTube and YouTubers and unboxing videos and Funko Pops. So there's lots of stuff we get from that.
Frank, you said, you know, we're storytellers. That's been you know,
ironically yes.
But what do you guys consider yourselves to be? Because you're not necessarily film critics. Do you consider yourself content creators? Because I remember even someone like Sean Fennessy talked about how he doesn't consider himself a critic but as a content creator. So I was curious to know if you guys like have like a role that you feel like represents who you are as podcasters. I guess I'm not sure.
Well, I consider myself a YouTuber.
There you go.
I don't know. We just tell it like it is. We're not bought out corporate shills. We represent the real film audience, like kind of cinephiles that we grew up with. I think we just fill a niche for that type of world. What I liked about Film Junk when I first started listening is it bridged the gap between like popular cinema and blockbusters and indie niche genre films, where it felt like other film stuff was either too snobby or too like populist. And this, it kind of brings both together and sees the value in lots of different movies. So I don't consider myself anything really. I can't speak for these guys.
I don't consider myself anything either.
Yeah.
I think Sean gets interrupted all the time on the show as well as a thing. I think that on what Frank was saying, we managed to find a good balance between talking about films in hopefully a thoughtful way when we feel compelled by the film to do so, and still trying to keep it light and accessible and entertaining, but not forgetting that we're also trying our best to review movies.
Yeah, I mean, it is tricky because, like, I definitely wouldn't consider us film critics because sometimes our review of a movie will veer off into just talking about what happened to us in the theater while we saw the movie, you know, and then we sometimes we don't even circle back to really talk about the movie. It's just wherever the conversation goes, really. But you know, sometimes we are putting an effort in and really thinking about a movie and getting deep with it. So it just depends on the movie, depends on the day. But yeah, I don't know. I just don't put labels on us. I just, I'm not into that.
Yeah, and just non-binary, you know, keep it open. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, Eric might have a suggestion, like just how humble we are, and you might consider us heroes.
Yeah. Hero drop, you know?
We get a hero absolutely. Drop I mean,
yes.
I don't, can a hero drop, will that get flagged for copyright on whatever?
Well, let's test it out.
Here we go.
What are you talking about? It's so painful to listen to this idiocy.
Beautiful.
We're beautiful.
Another thing that you guys have talked a lot about is, you know, Frank, you mentioned, you know, threatening to go digital. How do you decide in what you're going to buy on 4K? Like, for example, Frank, I know you really loved Nosferatu, and I know all of you guys did. Would you pick that up on 4K, even if it doesn't have special features on it? Because I've noticed, like, a lot of new releases through major studios, unless it's like a Vinegar Syndrome, or even Criterion seems to be lacking on special features now. Is there a process in terms of, like, how you pick and choose? Because last year, it seemed like it was a pretty good year for physical media releases, whether it be, you know, Gummo or Happiness, films that have been, you know, long anticipated or in demand for a physical media release.
Well, before I answer that, I have to circle back because you reminded me talking about Flow and the Criterion release. It needs to be, it is not getting a Criterion release. It is its partner.
Yes.
Let's not give it that Criterion clout yet. People just want to put it on it immediately. Let's take a step back. But I still buy lots of stuff. I would buy Nosferatu. I don't care about special features. I guess they're nice to have to some degree, but I tend to load up on Amazon.com Black Friday sales. And if we go to visit Jay, if we go to Bay Street Video, I'll probably spend more than I should on 4K releases. So I still buy quite a bit of stuff. Only 4K though. Blu-ray is a dead medium.
Like DVD.
Oh, DVD. That's long gone. No DVDs ever. Only 4Ks.
Jay, what about yourself? Do you have, you know, like a cap or like a decision in terms of like what you're buying? Because I remember there was a time where you were talking about like when 4K was first starting that you would buy almost everything. But now, you know, that everything is getting released on 4K, it does feel like there's a bit of like a selection process, or you don't have to buy everything.
Yeah, I that's where digital is nice as well. Certain films that I hold in high regard, I guess I would purchase on physical, or if it's something that's an oddity that isn't available digitally, or you know, something that's released in a nice limited edition package or whatever, that's actually part of why you would buy it. But I find a lot of the bigger releases now sometimes aren't getting 4K physical releases. Sometimes they can be really expensive up here. Even big releases are now becoming imports for some reason. So it's very tempting when something is on digital and goes on sale for $4.99, and it's either you pay $4.99 for a 4K that's lesser quality than the physical but still good, versus sometimes $40 for certain things. I think I've kind of decided to, it's not one or the other for me, it's riding both, like riding both of those things right down the center to some sort of goal.
I would say Jay still buys a lot of physical media and is not that discerning, especially when it comes to boutique releases.
He does have access to stores in Toronto that we don't. So that
Bay Street Video, basically. Yeah.
Yeah. And the Vinegar Syndrome store that opened up here recently, Eyesore Cinema, I check out as well. And there's some good options in Toronto still.
Well, you're on the inside, though, with Vinegar Syndrome now. I mean, at least with IFC, because you did the audio commentary for Mr. Lonely. And
yeah,
which I think is, if anybody hasn't listened to that yet, please pick up a copy because it is a really great audio commentary.
Is it?
It is. It is. I haven't picked up VHS Beyond yet. And I really do hope that the Cooking with Jerry segment is on there. But have you been able to confirm that or not? Or
I don't think it is. I don't think it is. Unfortunately, it was too hot for home release.
What about you, Sean, in terms of your collection? Do you still collect a lot of physical media, or is it something where, you know, if it's on digital, that's good enough?
Yeah, I'm kind of in between. Just, you know, like Jay said, like, it's, you know, something like The Substance, you know, it was my favorite movie last year. I've been like wanting to get the physical 4K, but it's not easy to find here. It's expensive to order online. And then I just saw on iTunes, I think it's like $12.99 right now. So I'm like, I guess I'm probably going to get that and just wait and hope like I'll get a sale or an opportunity to buy the physical cheaper down the road. That kind of seems to be what's happening more and more. I don't love it, but I would prefer to buy on physical for at least my favorite stuff. So
do any of you obsess over having to get the slipcase or buying the first edition of something if you really want it? Or is it something where you can wait and then pick it up later and not have to worry about those things?
I'm not. If I'm getting something that's like a limited first run thing, it's usually because I want the film. That doesn't worry me as much, but I would imagine Frank is probably more of the particular one with, you know, steelbooks, not wanting steelbooks and not wanting this, not wanting
or
that.
Or French on it, or...
Yeah, he's willing to throw the whole thing out if it's not, you know, living up to his expectations in terms of packaging, which is, like, what, the most simple... You like your packaging simple.
Well, I mean, Jay, let's not put it all on me. You also don't get physical media with French on it, right? You adopted that practice.
I didn't say I don't. I do. Okay, just or don't. There.
SOS Phantoms. That's another era.
Yes. Yeah. You know, right. I mean, I do have. I think I have one thing currently with version Francais Incluse on it, but Frank is very particular.
It's just an aesthetic thing. Like looking at the spines on the shelf, I don't like seeing two titles. And what were we talking about?
I mean, clearly, aesthetically,
oh, slipcase.
The beauty of a collection. Look at behind Eric there. It just looks gorgeous. All of that like vomit color all over the place, like random colors. It just looks beautiful.
It is a disaster. It's representative of my own absent-minded qualities. So I'm surprised that you haven't, because I know you mentioned when you started the Patreon that you might do like a behind the scenes of your collection, Jay, because I can't imagine how many Blu-rays and 4Ks you have at this point. And that's always been something I've been kind of curious about.
I don't think I ever said anything about that. I think it has come up that people have wanted to see us do things about our collections, but mine
Jay's
is a disaster.
Definitely the holdout. He does not want to reveal the truth about
your
his collection.
I mean I'm fine with but it's just really I'm currently actually for an upcoming Patreon junk mail. Someone had sent a question in asking where our numbers are at with our collections currently, and I am in the process of logging my collection into My Movies Pro 5, which keeps track of all of your discs. So that's coming, but nothing is alphabetical in my collection right now either.
There's another question I had with Blu-rays and 4Ks, because there's something else that you brought up, Jay, or at least have in the past, is that documentaries don't really get a lot of love or, you know, transfers onto the formats. Like, unless it is a boutique label, And there are films in the past that you have talked about that still, I don't, at least in North America, have never been released on Blu-ray or 4K, like Mandibala. I think that was one of the first documentaries that you always would talk about in terms of, you know, it not being a traditional documentary in terms of how it tells the story, and not simply being a talking heads doc or falling into a stereotype. And so, or even The English Surgeon was another one that I always remember you would talk about. Do you think it's gotten any better with releases of documentaries on Blu-ray or 4K, or is it still like a process where there's still a lot that's not available?
There's definitely still a lot that's not available, but there's stuff that is coming out now through, like The English Surgeon has a UK release through Second Sight Films or Second Run. I get those two mixed up, but which Frank wouldn't buy because it's a UK release and he will not accept any imports into his collection. Understandably so. And some of the Vinegar Syndrome partner labels have been putting out documentaries. It seems like maybe there's now, like, no, I think when 4K, even when Blu-ray started, it always comes up this, you know, what are they going to release on? They're not going to put everything out on this format again. And every time, all the weirdos come in and start buying all of the garbage that has not been released on formats previously. And it opens up a whole new door for, like, you go to Vinegar Syndrome, the store, and the number of releases that they have amongst their label and the partner labels is astonishing. And the fact that people are buying it, at least anecdotally, suggests that physical media isn't dead. It's just kind of shrunken down and targeted specifically the people who want it. So I think that documentaries will start to get more play in that regard with some of the smaller labels, but there's still a lot that's not out there.
Well, at least, you know, something like Microwave Massacre is available on Blu-ray, right? You know, in terms of the sicko films out there, because I think you've probably have seen that at least a few times in your life. So
yeah, I mean, Microwave Massacre, we did a review of Sex World on the Film Junk podcast, which got its own 4K Blu-ray release. There's lots of stuff out there that's getting the treatment that they may or may not deserve.
Yes, and that's why I love Vinegar Syndrome, even though you made a really good point, is that it does feel like there's so many partner labels at this point, and every month they'll either drop one or they'll add a new one, and it's almost hard to keep up with all of those labels and also how expensive it can be. So
it's become a real, you know, it's harder to go blind buying now because there is so much stuff and you can just spend a lot of money on these boutique releases of things that are like, now here's a something shot on video 80 minute horror movie from some guy in Wisconsin. Is that worth the $40? Probably. But you have to limit yourself at some point.
Yeah. But also, I mean, I thought about you guys actually with this month's announcements, because Cannibal Girls is getting a Blu-ray release, and you guys did a Canucksploitation podcast. And would that be something that you would do again? Because that was, I think, one of my favorite episodes that you guys covered. And you kind of never went back to doing something like that.
Yeah, we're always open to returning to, like, I think there's a lot of stuff that we kind of, to be honest, I do not remember that.
I think that was a long time ago. I don't think I wasn't part of that.
But having said that, there are things where we've done little, you know, spin-off specials or whatever that we definitely would return to. And there's a lot of good Canucksploitation picks that we haven't talked about, so maybe Sean's the one who determines all of that stuff. It's
yeah, right,
he sits there quietly looking, but you know he's in control when you see this guy.
Yeah, like, why Sean, have you been so hesitant not to do an Alien Invasion premium
or a Nuclear War premium?
Yeah, what's up with that, Sean?
It just didn't seem like there was enough movies to support it, but let's be honest, Jay is the one who calls the shots here. Frank and I throw out ideas all the time, but Jay is the one that gives a yay or nay. And I guess that's the one that he actually really wanted. You were like a little hesitant, but if he's going to push for it, it'll happen.
There are a few.
Especially in the early 80s. I mean, you guys have talked about Threads and The Day After and all of those movies before. You know, why not do, especially now, it seems very timely that the world is, it feels like it's ending, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it could be a public service announcement as well as entertainment.
Exactly. I do have to wrap with all three of you, but
I got to go too.
I wanted to say thank you so much for the 20 years, but also, you know, what you've done and what it means to, I think, a lot of the fans that always come back. But you guys have helped me through, you know, depression and loneliness. And also, I just feel like, you know, you're some of the best voices in the field and are always open to have a conversation and invite everybody in to listen. And obviously as well, you know, Beauty Day and How to Build a Time Machine and Curse Films are incredible. And so every week I always look forward to seeing, you know, a new episode ready to go or a new premium ready to go. And thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Eric. I mean, the sincerity in that statement makes, I'm sure, all of us very uncomfortable, but
makes me want to drop tear a little bit, but
we certainly appreciate you and all of our listeners and the people who have stuck around for a long time, and hopefully we'll keep listening, and maybe some new listeners will jump on board thanks to Eric.
We have a passionate and dedicated fan base that it's pretty humbling sometimes when people tell stories like Eric just did, and that's why we do it. That's why we do the podcasting. Heroes.
You are heroes, all three of you. Thanks so much, guys. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Eric. Thank you. Sorry I slept in.